earlier part of the letter, the third proposition of Paul does follow the outline, chapters 5 and 6. But the first two propositions that are on page 5 in your folder, they sort of ignore the chapter divisions. And so it's a little uneven, but we can work through all that. That's not really going to be a problem for us. We were looking at the first proposition. This is the first statement Paul makes that he's going to then prove by various statements that follow after it. Verses 11 and 12 is the first proposition, where Paul's telling these Galatian Christians who are paying attention to or listening to the false teachers there in Galatia and are being led back to a Judaistic view of the law. He's saying, the gospel that I preached to you, I didn't get it from man. No man taught it to me. I got it straight by direct revelation from Jesus Christ. You'll see that there in verse 12. Then the first proof we looked at, he talked about his former lifestyle, verses 13 and 14, how that proves that I didn't get this. I wasn't taught this growing up. This wasn't how my parents reared me. I was actually brought up in what way? Well, in a Judaist or in a law-focused way or a law-centered way. The Pharisee of Pharisees, Philippians 3, a very strict Jew. So he wouldn't have chosen this if it had been his choice. And we looked at all these passages on Wednesday night that support all through the Acts record and some of the, at least a couple of the epistles that he wrote, indicated that his former actions were contrary to the gospel. They were not in support of. So that was the first proof. Now this is what we looked at Wednesday night, and let's go back and reread verses 15 through 20 of chapter 1. Here's the second proof of this affirmation. And he talks about his initial efforts after his conversion in Damascus. So we'll be looking at Acts 9 and Galatians 1 a lot together this morning. So you want to go ahead and mark or turn to Acts chapter 9. We'll look at that in harmony with Galatians chapter 1. They really go hand in hand together. All right, his first efforts at preaching the gospel. David Steele, read for us again now. Galatians 1, starting in verse 15, and read through verse 20. Okay, we'll especially emphasize verse 17 in a moment. That goes really well with the point Paul's making here. All right, Paul didn't have to be taught by anybody to start preaching, did he? He didn't. Now, he had to be taught what to do to be saved, didn't he? He had to be taught that. Ananias told him what to do to be saved. But once he became a Christian, then it appears that he was then inspired to start doing his preaching, and then, of course, later in his writing. Now, turn back to Acts 9. Now, let's look at verse 20, just to compare what he says here in verses 15 and 16. All right, Acts 9, you'll see at after Ananias says to him what he does through verse 17, verse 18 of Acts 9, immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales. He regained his sight. What happened? He's baptized. All right. So now he's a Christian. He took food and was strengthened. Verse 19. For several days he was with the disciples who were at Damascus. Now look at verse 20. What does it say? Immediately he started preaching. Well, who had to teach him? There was no teaching in terms of what to preach. And that goes with what he's saying here in Galatians 1. Now, look back in Galatians 1, and let's take out that phrase. And I'm not saying that because it's unimportant, but in verse 15, he talks about that statement, how God called him from his mother's womb. Let's just not read that to get the main thought of verses 15 and 16. I'm going to read those verses without that phrase. But when he who had set me apart was pleased to reveal his Son in me, that I might preach him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately consult with flesh and blood. That's the point. Who did Paul have to go consult with to get his facts and his story straight about what to preach? The answer is nobody. No one. He started preaching immediately. And you see how this is a proof of his statement. The gospel that I preach was not given to me by man. It was given to me by direct revelation of Jesus Christ. I got this from God, and we even see that in the Acts record. So Galatians 1 and Acts 9 go really well hand in hand here. His initial efforts in Damascus and Arabia, which again point back to Acts chapter 9, prove that God equipped him to preach immediately. He didn't need to go sit at someone's feet. Now, whose feet had he sat at all the years growing up as a Jew? Gamaliel taught him the law, so he was a student in that case. But when he became a Christian and started preaching, who trained him? What man trained him? No man trained him. He started preaching immediately. And so that's the proof of this affirmation he's making. Now, look in verse 18, back in Galatians 1. Now, I think there's two points to bring out in verse 18 that, again, help us really focus in like a laser, if we can use that statement, on this point. Verse 18. 3 years later, this is how the New American Standard reads. 3 years later, I went up to Jerusalem to become acquainted with, the King James says, to see Cephas or Peter, and I stayed with him 15 days. There's two points in here that tell us this visit to Jerusalem was not for training or learning purposes. The first one is, it appears he didn't even know Cephas. The Greek word for see in the King James, and you may have a marginal note in the side of your Bible there, it means to get acquainted with. What's that suggest to you about him and Peter? He didn't even know Peter. So if he didn't know Peter, how could he go up there to learn from Peter? Well, that's true. Peter didn't know him either. So he had to go up there and just get acquainted. Now, that's the first point. So that tells us this visit. And so he was in Damascus and Arabia for how long after his conversion? If you use Galatians 1. 3 years. He spent preaching and teaching in Damascus and Arabia for 3 years. Then Paul writes, I went to Jerusalem for what purpose, at least this far? Just to meet Peter, to get acquainted with him. It wasn't to be taught at all. Secondly, in this verse, what tells us it wasn't for teaching purposes? He was just there for 15 days. What can you learn in 15 days? It was too short to go up there and be taught. All these things that an apostle had to be taught to preach the gospel. Very, very short visit. That wasn't his purpose at all. So we see in this one verse, verse 18 of Galatians 1, Paul was proving, listen, I didn't have to be taught this gospel that I preached by anybody. I got this straight from God. I didn't need any man's help. That's solid proof of what he'd pinked. Now, let me pause here for a minute. I think it's good for us to go back, take just a few minutes, and look at Paul's visits to Jerusalem, two of which are mentioned in the Galatians record, and sort of get a chronology of our facts here, so we can try to keep it all straight in our mind. There's five visits Paul made to Jerusalem, recorded for us in the Scripture. Like I said, two are here in Galatians. So this is not in your material. This you can write as a side note you'd like in your folder. All right. In Acts 9, he was converted, we know. He was on the road to Damascus. The Lord appeared to him in the vision, told him, you got to go into Damascus, and it'll be told you what you must do to be saved. And so in Acts 9 and in Galatians 1, 17 and 18, the verses that we just read, especially at the end of verse 17, what is it that Paul alludes to? Well, after my conversion, then I spent some time in Damascus and Arabia preaching. So he was in Damascus after his conversion. He started preaching immediately. He went away into Arabia and then came back to Damascus. That took place for about 3 years, according to Galatians 1. All right? Now, that's not a visit. That's just sort of setting the tone. Now, the first visit is here in Galatians 1. And this is the same visit. Go back to Acts 9. I believe it's the same visit. It's the same trip, if you will. Acts 9, starting at verse 23, Paul's at Damascus. Well, what happens to him in verse 23 of Acts 9? The Jews are plotting to do what with him? They're going to kill him. So what had to happen? Well, he had to be let down through an opening in the wall in the basket just to escape. And where does he go? He goes, here's the first visit. He goes to Jerusalem. He tries to join the disciples in Jerusalem. What happened to him then? They didn't believe him either. They were not very receptive of Saul. He's still Saul at this moment. Didn't believe him. Thought it was a trick. They'd heard all that he'd done to the church, persecuting Christians. So they were not opening with, yes, Saul, Brother Saul, come on in, we welcome you. That wasn't happening. This is that first visit. And it's 3 years after his labors he spent in Damascus and Arabia, according to Acts 9, his conversion, and then Galatians 1. All right? First visit. Now the second visit, turn ahead to Acts 11. Just real quickly. Acts 11, they're at the end. Verses 27 through 30. Prophets come from Jerusalem to where? Antioch. Now, what's so special about Antioch in the early chapters of Acts? Well, I shouldn't say early. Here in these middle chapters. Yes, not just his, but who's he with still? He and Barnabas. They are working with the church in Antioch. It's from Antioch that they begin their journey. Well, they begin their first journey together. And they, that's sort of, as Brother Lambert says, that was a home base. So prophets come down from Jerusalem to Antioch. What do they prophesy about? Famine. There's going to be this famine. There's going to be some needy saints somewhere. So what did the church in Antioch decide to do? We're going to send relief. Well, who were the messengers on this trip? Barnabas and Saul. Now, do you see where it says in these four verses that they went to Jerusalem? Well, it doesn't say that. It just says that they went to Judea. But look at chapter 12 of Acts, here at the end of it, and look at verse 25. Barnabas and Saul returned from where? Jerusalem. So they did go to Jerusalem and take the benevolence that the Antioch saints, this would not be Antioch of Pisidia, but Antioch of Syria, up the coast there. They gathered that and sent that by Barnabas and Saul to Antioch. So this is the second visit that Paul makes to Jerusalem. All right? Now, visit number three is now back in Galatians chapter 2. And this is Acts 15. Now, something else happened there at Antioch, Acts 15. And certain men come down from Judea to Galatia. And they start, to Antioch. They start troubling the Christians, especially what Christians? Gentile Christians. And they say, essence, you're going to have to do what? You've got to be circumcised after the custom of Moses if you want to be saved. Verse 2 of Acts 15 says Barnabas and Saul had a great dissension, or not a small dispute, a big one, big debate over this. And so everyone decided, let's take this issue up to Jerusalem, to the apostles and the Jerusalem elders, and have them sort all this out. And Barnabas and Saul went. Well, in Galatians 2, which we're not there yet in our studies, but in Galatians 2, 1 through 10, that's the visit Paul's talking about in that portion of the letter, and they harmonize with Acts 15. So this is 14 years after the previous visit. He now goes to Jerusalem for a third time to discuss this issue of circumcision. So again, Galatians 2 will parallel Acts 15, and we'll get to that just in a few moments. All right. The fourth visit is an implied one. I admit that it's not stated, but back in Acts, this time it's chapter 18. At the end of the second journey, by this time we know Barnabas and Saul have split. Before this journey started, they split over who? John Mark. Paul didn't want to take him, and Barnabas did. So they go their separate ways. Paul takes Silas. Barnabas takes Mark. And Paul completes the second journey. And it's just one statement in Acts 18 and verse 22. And when he had landed at Caesarea, and then the King James says, gone up and greeted the church. He came down and went where? To Antioch. Well, the going up, I believe, is Jerusalem. He went up to, it is higher in elevation than Caesarea, up to Jerusalem and then down to Antioch. So that's his fourth visit. It's not stated there, but it seems to me that's what he's talking about. Now, If you disagree, that's fine. We wouldn't have to go to war over that. And I'm just saying it. That's what most students will say. He went up, went to the church. Now, that could be another church, but I think it's Jerusalem. So even if it's not, then, okay, we can discount that one. But to me, that's the fourth one. Okay? We'll just leave it at that. And the fifth visit, we know, the fact this seems to be the final visit, at the end of the third journey, he has to go where? To Jerusalem, and in what state? In what condition? He's bound. He said, I know chains await me in Jerusalem. And he got there, and the Jews grab him, they arrest him, they have that hearing. Paul makes his public defense before the Jews. And finally, he does what? He makes his appeal to Rome, which then sets forth the last part of the book of Acts. So, quickly, there are the five visits that we can find in the Scripture where Paul makes trips to Jerusalem. And in this Galatians letter, this letter to Galatia, we have two of them mentioned. The first one, after his conversion, and the third one, which is Galatians chapter 2, which is harmonized with Acts 15. Okay, so I just want to go through that real quickly. Now, verses 15 through 20 is the second proof statement. I didn't have to have any help. When I began my work, I went right to preaching. I didn't have anybody help tell me, teach me what to do. All right, any comments or questions about verses 15 through 20? Sir? Yes. Absolutely. We have the internet. We have phones. You're right. That's true. Norm makes a good point. News didn't travel as fast back then. So someone said, well, it would take 3 years. Well, but like you said, they had to send reports out by person. Couldn't call, couldn't write, couldn't email. Well, they could write, but it wouldn't get there very fast. And so his point is well taken. If he went to Jerusalem, he's going back to meet two different groups of people. He's going back to meet old friends. I mean, the Jews are there, but also one maybe he even tried to persecute. And that's why they weren't very receptive of him. So 3 years is really nothing in that situation, is Norm's point. That's a very good point to make. All right, now back to Galatians 1. Let's look at his third proof statement. All right, proof statement number 3. This starts in verse 21. Here's the third way Paul proves. The gospel that I preach is not according to men. I didn't get it from a man. I got it by revelation of Jesus Christ. After he says what he does in verse 20, the things I'm writing to you, I assure you, I promise you, I'm not lying. This is all true. Verse 21. Then I went into the regions of Syria and Cilicia. And I was still unknown by sight to the churches of Judea, which were in Christ. But only they kept hearing, he who once persecuted us is now preaching the faith, which he once tried to destroy. And they were glorifying God because of me. Where is Saul from, by the way? Tarsus. Where's Tarsus? It's in Cilicia. So after Acts 9... Remember? In fact, turn back to Acts 9 one more time. Let's make sure we get our facts straight here. Acts chapter 9. He tried to join the church at Jerusalem, tried to become a part of them. And they weren't having any of it. Who had to come to his defense? Good old Barnabas was there. Came to his defense, and Barnabas convinced the church. In fact, look what he said there. He said, this is Acts 9. And verse 27, he told the Christians there how Saul had seen the Lord on the road to Damascus. The Lord had talked to him. And how at Damascus, Saul had spoken out boldly in preaching. So Barnabas convinced the church to take him in. He was with them, verse 28, moving about freely in Jerusalem. Verse 29, talking and arguing, disputing, debating with the Hellenistic Jews. But again, what's the problem? They're going to put him to death again. And Paul never could get away from plots on his life. Have you ever had to live that way? I haven't. Can you imagine the stress that would have been on this man? Knowing that at any moment someone could grab him, haul him off to an alley or a dark corner and run him through with a knife or a sword? Always living under the threat of death. That's just mind-boggling how he could keep his wits about him. But he did. So again, there's the plot. Verse 30. Now watch what it says. When the brethren learned of it, they brought him down from Jerusalem, down to Caesarea, and sent him away to Tarsus, where he's from. Back to Galatians 1 and verse 21. Where does he go? Syria and Cilicia. So those harmonize again, we see. It's the same story. What Luke writes there is what Paul writes here to the Galatian Christians. There's a harmony there. So now he's saying, here's the third way that I'm going to prove to you that my gospel is not according to men. He goes away to Syria and Cilicia. Now, what's he say in Galatians 1, verse 22, back in Galatians 1? What does he say about when he gets there, basically? No, in Galatians 1, and verse 22. They didn't know him. That's right. I was unknown. I get there, nobody knew who I was. I was virtually unknown. So the third proof is his not only his literal, but even his virtual anonymity. When he leaves Jerusalem, Paul went into Syria and Cilicia. There's verse 21 with Acts 9, 29 and 30. He wasn't even known by the brethren. Who would have taught him? Nobody knew him. It wasn't a prime condition for someone to set Saul aside and said, now, we heard about your former conduct, persecuting Christians. We heard about your conversion. We heard about your early preaching in Damascus and Arabia. So to help you be a better preacher, let's give you a few facts here, you know, sort of set you straight. That didn't happen because why? Paul says, I got over there and nobody even knew me. If I met him on a street corner, they wouldn't know who I was. I was an unknown. But they did know something. I mean, they didn't know him personally, but they didn't know what? This go back to Norma's point, verse 23. What did they know? Well, they didn't know it themselves, but they had heard it. The report had been circulated. Well, this is that fella who persecuted the Christians, he who once persecuted us is now preaching the faith which he once tried to destroy. So they knew that through only hearsay. And I'm not diminishing that importance. I'm just saying they didn't know it themselves personally because they didn't know Paul. They had just only heard about it. So, that tells us there was no relationship, was what I'm trying to emphasize here. They didn't know him. But what did they do about this one that they now see preaching? That's right. They began thanking God, glorifying God because of this great change that was in this man. Once they started hearing him preach, this is how it is in my mind as I look at it. Once they start hearing him preach and seeing him work for the cause of the gospel, they have to join that with or marry that with what they heard about his past. And they say, what? Man, what a change. I mean, we heard he used to do this, but now we're hearing him for ourselves preach and teach and work for the cause of Christ. What a change has taken place in this man. And they give God all the glory for that. That is a proof of the gospel. You take all of us just filthy sinners before. And any good that God can use us for after our conversion in the cause of the kingdom, that's proof of not how great we are, of our own talents, but how good and merciful God is and can use us in that way. So there's this third proof statement. But the brethren didn't know me up there. There wasn't any way for someone who knew me to call me aside and say, now, look, Saul, let's get a few things straight here. Let me teach you some things. That didn't happen. That's the third proof statement. All right. Now look at the fourth one. This is chapter 2, now 1 through 10. This is the Jerusalem conference. Acts 2, we'll start in verse 1. Kevin, would you read for us the first 10 verses of Galatians 2, please? Okay. Now, there's a couple of statements in here that could be translated or interpreted one way or another, and we'll go through this as best we can. The view that I'm going to present may not be what you would necessarily think, and that's okay. We can have that discussion, but let's work through the text. There's a lot here to consider in these 10 verses. All right. Again, when the time came for doctrinal matters to be discussed, now let me pause here and ask a question that I've asked before when we started this section of the letter. These Judaizing teachers in Galatia, what are they doing to Paul in his absence among these Galatian churches? Well, they're trying to discredit him. Now, we don't know exactly what they said, but let's just work through it in our minds. What kinds of things would you expect these teachers to have said about Paul and his apostleship? I don't think we'd be too far off the mark if we just work through a couple of assumptions. He's not inspired. He's not even one of the, he's not an apostle. He's not one of the original 12. He's just not all he claims to be. So you just can imagine those kinds of things would have been said about Paul to discredit him. Now, I'm asking that because at this point, this fourth proof statement, it comes in really, really clear. That's really behind what Paul's arguing. If it could be proven to the Galatian Christians that this man, he's not really an apostle, he's just sort of on the next level below the first 12. You know, he's not on their level. This would have been the occasion where that would have been evident when this conference took place. And I think we'll see that's what Paul's arguing here. So, when the time came to discuss doctrinal matters, and this was a major, major doctrinal issue. As you recall back in Acts 15, it was causing a lot of disturbance among the Gentile Christians. We know that so because at least in the letter, back to Acts 15 again, and the letter as it begins in verse 24, when James advised or counseled sending this letter, the apostles wrote, "Since we have heard that some of our number, to whom we gave no instruction, are disturbing you with their words and unsettling your souls." So saints were being unsettled and greatly disturbed over what was being taught. This was a doctrinal issue, and it had to get ironed out. Well, did the apostles call for Paul? Now come up here, and we're gonna set you straight on some things. Is that how it worked? No. Back in Galatians 2, why did Paul go up? By revelation. Who told him to go? God told him to go. The apostles didn't send for him. No. God said, you go up there and you settle this with the other apostles, you and Barnabas with you. Now, we don't have this written for us in Acts 15, but in Galatians 2, who else went with Paul and Barnabas? Titus went. Titus was on that journey. And we'll talk more about that just in a moment. So, he didn't go up there to be taught. He went there to tell them what he had done. All right? Now, what's already taken place by the time we get to Acts 15 in the Acts record? What journey has been taking place? It'd be the first journey. Right? Second journey will start after the conference. So, they had already been on their first journey, Paul and Barnabas. Acts chapters 13 and 14. You read the record. How many people did they preach to? Lots. How successful were they? Many people turned to the Lord. Where were they preaching? Antioch of Pisidia. Especially in what region? It ties back into the letter. It would be the Galatian region. They went to the Galatian cities. And so he had been there. All right? And he had done many great accomplishments and deeds and feats for the gospel. So he'd already been preaching. And now this conference is being convened or called. We call it a conference. The Bible doesn't call it that. But that's what we this meeting to discuss this issue. And so Paul's not going up there to say, well, now let me first find out from the other apostles if what I've done this past trip was okay or not. That's not why he's going. He's going to go tell them, here's what I preached. Here's what the Lord told me to preach. And I'm not here to seek your approval. He wasn't sent for by the apostles, the first part of verse 2 of Galatians 2. It was because of a revelation that I went up. God told me to go. And back in Acts 15, again, look at verse 2, hadn't Paul already begun this debate? Well, yes. When those men came down from Judea to Antioch, and they said this to the Gentile Christians, you've got to be circumcised. Did Paul have to say, okay, time out here, let's go to Jerusalem and see what the apostles say about this? Is that what he did? No. What did he do? Well, he and Barnabas. They tried to straighten them out. They had the great dispute with him. So Paul had already begun this debate himself even before he got to Jerusalem, hadn't he? He tried to straighten them out on this. What you're teaching is wrong. It's not required of Gentiles to be circumcised. Not the gospel that I've been preaching. So again, do you see in this, how much did Paul need the Jerusalem apostles? That's what I'll call the group in Jerusalem. How much did he need them? Need them at all. That doesn't mean that they weren't important. He didn't need their help. He's preaching it on his own because he's as much as inspired as those men were and could defend the truth the same level that they could. Didn't need them at all. His apostleship was genuine as much as theirs was. Now, look back in Galatians 2, those verses that Kevin read for us, especially we want to look at verses, verse 6 particularly. Does the King James, either the old or the new, use the word reputation in verse 6? Or is it a different word? High reputation. Okay. Let's focus on this issue of their reputation for the moment. Galatians 2 and verse 6. Paul writes, "But from those who were of high reputation," then my version has parentheses, "what they were makes no difference to me." Now that could be translated, Paul saying, I didn't really care about them. That's not what he's saying. Paul respected the other apostles. But what he's saying by that is what? What they were, that's right. What I got to preach was from the Lord. What these men thought about it really is irrelevant to me. I'm going to do what the Lord told me to do. So these of high reputation, what they were makes no difference to me. God showed no partiality. Well, those who were of high reputation, they contributed nothing to me. Is that how the King James reads? The end of verse 6. They added nothing to me. Now again, that could sound like Paul is saying, I didn't need those guys. I mean, they couldn't tell me. Is Paul being cocky here? No, he's not being cocky. But he's simply saying, when I got there, the group of the apostles had to say, now Paul, let's sit down and as a group, now we've been with the Lord longer than you have, let's tell you how this goes. That didn't happen. They didn't add a thing to me. I'd already been preaching this. And I needed no one's help. I got this straight from the Lord. Yes, sir. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Probably so. Probably so. Yes. Very good point. That's correct. That's right. Acts 15:24, in the letter they wrote, the apostles again said, to whom we gave no instruction. We didn't send these guys out. They've been out here on their own preaching. So this didn't come from us. So I think your point is very valid. Is knocking the other apostles. Yes. That's right. And that is not correct. Paul and the apostles are in agreement. In fact, Galatians 2 will prove that later on in this section. But the Judaizing teachers would have, I have no problem believing they would have twisted the facts to make it sound like you've got this great divide between the original 12 and Paul over here. He's not even a real apostle. So Paul has to defend himself, not because of what they were doing, but because of what the Judaizing teachers were slandering him to be. I think that's a very good point to make. So this idea about the apostles' reputation here in Galatians 2. Look in verse 2. It says, Paul dealt with them privately. Paul went up, last part of verse 2. When I went up, I submitted to them the gospel which I preached among the Gentiles, but I did so privately. Why would Paul do this privately? Well, Brother Lambert's point is, Paul wanted the apostle to realize that his message was from God. Do we not think that they knew that anyway? They were inspired men. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just throwing out a question here. Why do this privately? Because there's element out here, that's right. And so this is one of these points that could be translated or interpreted one way or another. Okay, I think this is the meeting alluded to in Acts 15. Look back at Acts 15 now one more time. Look at verse 6. Acts 15. Let's start in verse 4. And see if we don't see an allusion or a reference here. Acts 15, verse 4. When Paul and Barnabas arrive at Jerusalem, so they've come from Antioch to Jerusalem, when they arrived there, they were received by the church. Well, that's who? That's everybody. Received by the church and the apostles and the elders. And they reported all that God had done with them. So far, through verse 4, who's heard this report? Just the apostles? No, the whole church heard it. And with the elders. Now verse 5. But certain ones of the sect of the Pharisees, these are the ones who are causing the trouble. Certain ones of the sect of the Pharisees who had believed stood up saying, it is necessary to circumcise them and to direct them to observe the law of Moses. Now verse 6, look at it carefully. And the apostles and the elders came together. I get the idea from that they have now withdrawn from the group, the church, and now they're meeting privately. That's how I understand verse 6. The church is not there. Now they're discussing this. Not because there's a problem. Oh, what are we going to do about this? We have a big problem now in the church. No, they just withdrew privately to deliberate and to discuss amongst themselves. And I believe when Paul says in Galatians 2 and verse 2, this private meeting, I believe, is Acts 15 and verse 6, when they began to deliberate this point. On this issue. All right? Now, this reputation. Paul's purpose would be to go up there and show up the other apostles, do it publicly. That wouldn't be why he would go. If that happened, if that would have been Paul's nature, which it wasn't, but let's just play what if for a moment. If he had done that, what would that have done to the early church? It would have tore it apart. You're right, Brother Ogles. It would have caused such a deep wedge and a schism and a division. That wouldn't have accomplished anything. For Paul to go up there and say, well, these guys say this, but I'm teaching this. Even though that would not be incorrect or be anything that Paul said would be wrong, but what would that imply? That would put in somebody's mind, there's a difference between the apostleship of Paul and that of the other 12. And we can't have that. We all got to be the same on this. So I see Paul here being rather diplomatic, which is good. Sometimes diplomacy is a good thing to have. Our bell is rung, so let's stop right here. We'll pick up this point on Wednesday night. The Lord willing, I'll have more material ready for you at that time. And we'll finish this fourth proof statement about why Paul's gospel was not given to him by a man, but by God.